its own sweet song. Wake up, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers.
Hello and welcome to this week's Red Robin Podcast Weekly, which is powered by 360 Chartered Accountants and Budget Ties Auto Centre. Rovers are currently enduring the worst run of results since 2012, when head coach Craig Sandercock oversaw us, with the Robins currently occupying 10th place in the Super League table. All is not lost, though, as Rovers are just 4 points off a playoff place, although if a playoff charge is to be mounted, you can't help thinking a win on Sunday against 11th place Wakefield is now a must. Lee Robinson from the Wakefield Trinity Heritage podcast will be joining us later on to help preview that game, whilst this week's fan panel compromises of the returning Carl Smith, Graham Turner and James Pearling. With Rovers' disappointing Magic Weekend defeat at the hands of our Cross City rivals, giving us plenty to discuss. Gentlemen, always a pleasure to be speaking to you. Unfortunately, it's on the back of another defeat. Our worst run in, 10 years? The wheels have sort of definitely come off our season so far. But like I said, all is not lost. Graham, you was on last week's podcast. There was a bit of positivity about the place, wasn't there? Obviously, we've seen how Rovers performed on Sunday. And for me, it was a bit of a frustrating performance because there were so many things we did right, but ultimately we came away with a loss.
Yeah, I think that's probably the key word, Chris, is frustration. I think all fans would have been disappointed with the overall result. But I think there were definite signs of positivity to be had when you sort of look in the cold light of day at some of the individual performances. We started to score some points, which was good. And you know, those have been hard to come by in the last few weeks. I thought defensively we could show up a bit better individually and collectively. I thought that was a weak spot, but at least I thought. And listening to Danny Maguire afterwards, I thought the effort levels were good. I think the results over the last couple of weeks, Huddersfield, Toulouse, have given us, you know, a few body blows. But I thought there was some much improved performance. Positives for me were around Fishwick coming on, and we talked last week, and would he, wouldn't he? And I think I made the point of, look, if Danny Maguire believes he's good enough to do it, then let's trust in what he, you know, what he believes in. I thought he showed up well. There were some good positive moments. Ball in hand, and I thought, if I'm completely honest, and this is probably where the frustration comes from, we should have had it wrapped up by half time if we'd have been clinical in our attacking execution. We bombed three tries in the first half, which could have put us out of sight with a better execution on those. And I know some people have got other things they want to or put forward as reasons why we lost the game on Sunday afternoon. But I think if we could have been a bit more composed in attack in that first half, we could have saved ourselves a lot of nervous energy and ultimately won that game and wrapped it up by half-time.
Yeah, and James, Rovers got off to a great start, didn't they? Matty Parcell scoring on the 8th minute despite the referee, Chris Kendall, sending it up as no try. Lacken-Coote misses the kick, but Rovers led 4-2. Obviously, Luke Gale getting the early penalty. And it took 25 minutes until Hull FC got their first try of the game. And watching that game back, Rovers were pretty dominant in them opening 25 minutes, wasn't they?
Yeah, they were. I'll sort of really echo a lot what Graham said. I thought, if you look at the overall performance that we saw on Sunday, it was like completely chalk and cheese to what we'd seen in the previous probably 9 weeks or so. I thought, you know, we were creating chances, and as Graham said, you know, just a bit more composure that game would have been out of sight at half time. But sort of say, trying to think back, look back at it with a bit of less emotion that we obviously all have after we've been beaten by them lot.
Yeah,
you know, I'm with Graham. I think there was quite a lot of positives to take out of it. As you know, as I said, you know, we're creating some chances. I thought Fishwick was outstanding for, you know, for a 17-year-old kid to make his debut in that sort of atmosphere against, you know, a pretty big and rugged Hull pack, you know, was really good. And I thought Tate was really good. You know, I thought he sort of, you know, I think he made quite a lot of yards, didn't he? And he sort of stood up well. And this is probably going to be shock a lot of people, but I thought Vetti and Sims were really good as well.
Definitely.
But, you know, they're setting themselves about and probably had the best games they've had for a while. And I think it was Sims who put a real couple of bone crunches in that is, you know, we probably knew he had in his armoury, but we just hadn't delivered them in the previous 2 years that he's been here. So, yeah, disappointing. But I think, you know, there's probably was some positive we could take out of it. And that's without even talking about Michael Lewis.
Yeah. Good evening to everyone who's tuning in live for this week's podcast, especially Michael Morton. He said, good evening, lads. Carl, there was three disallowed tries in that first half. When you're in the stadium, you don't always get the best view here. But I think when you look back and you see them tries again, I think the referee probably got them all right. You know, and it's all shoulda, woulda, coulda, isn't it? But I think them disallowed tries and the points we did score in that first half just highlighted what an attacking threat we was going forward, especially with Lachlan Coote. You know, every time he seems to get the ball out wide, he seems to be able to create something for the Robins.
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt, Chris. I think, to be honest with you, I was sat in like neutral area, so I wasn't sat behind the sticks with the rest of the Robins. And I saw both of them so-called forward passes and the obstruction. The obstruction's a farce. That rule's a farce, and it always has been, probably always will be. But I am telling you now, the second one of the two forward passes was not forward. I honestly don't know what the linesman, referee, donkey behind the screen, whoever it is who's made that call, it was definitely not forward. And there was a bunch of the black and whites above me to the left, and even there was laughing. It was that embarrassing. So I definitely don't think one of those was forward. And like Graham and James are saying a few minutes back, these are a lot of positives to take. But the one thing for me is edge defence, scrambling edge defence. And ultimately both teams, their edge defences were terrible. And a lot of points came down both flanks for both teams. So, yes, there's positives. And, yes, we've sat here for a number of weeks and says, this is good, that's good. I totally get that. But until we lock that back door up, especially down the two sides, it's a case of let's outscore teams because defensively we really do struggle even when we have got a fit team. So, ultimately, for me, as much it was a good game for, like you say, neutrals and other people looking on, it's that edge defence and defence wins your game, especially if you want to be at top end of the table.
Yeah, and especially when we went through that good run of form at the start of the season, we definitely shored up our left side, didn't we, with Ryan Hall and Sean Kennedy-Dowell, you know, forming a formidable partnership. It's always been a problem, our right edge, although we looked to have sorted that out, but at the moment, with Ryan Hall missing and our right edge constantly changing, we definitely lost that solidity, but in the game, Graham, Rovers could have easily wilted, I suppose, with them disallowed tries. You know, Rovers' heads could have gone down, but they rallied, didn't they? With Sam Wood going in for a try and then Mikey Lewis performing his first bit of magic with him going on in for a try on the hooter. And at 14-all, Rovers as a team and Rovers supporters must have been pretty confident that we could go on and put some more points on the board.
Yeah, absolutely. I think given the recent run of results, you know, Gents have alluded to defence already. But again, you know, the look at the last three or four fixtures where we've conceded high 20s, 30s points regularly, to concede it again is a worry. That's the first, you know, the first point. The points we did score, I thought, as I say, were good value for them. And like I said, should have put them away by half time, in my opinion, if we'd have been a bit more clinical in that execution and don't give the referee or the touch judges or the video refs the opportunity to deny the try, keep it clean, as it were. But yeah, the points that we scored, and I think I talked last week about the resilience of what happens when you go behind, your heads go down, or do you stick to your game plan, believe in that, trust in each other. And I think that was evident in the first half, that they didn't sulk after conceding two relatively quick tries back to back. They dusted themselves off pretty quickly, got back into the groove again, and you know, Sam Wood, Mikey Lewis levelled it up for half time. And you know, all but for the boot of Coote, we should have been ahead at half time, and I think that would have been a fair reflection of the game overall at that point.
Yeah, definitely. But what's criminal, what seems to be a feature of Rovers at the moment, is our inability to defend attacking positions from the opposition straight after half-time. And I've looked back at some of our recent defeats. So the Hull game, we conceded in the first minute after half-time. The Toulouse game, we conceded in the fourth minute after half-time. The Huddersfield game, we conceded in the first minute after half-time. St Helens in the seventh minute just after half-time. The Catalan game, we conceded in the second minute after half-time. Castleford defeat, we conceded in the eighth minute after half-time. And then we go back to the 12-0 defeat against Leeds, seventh minute. There's definitely a problem there, isn't there, James? Because you expect, with the team going in at half-time, you know, a rousing team talk, from whether it's from Danny Maguire or Tony Smith, and a reaffirming what the game plan is, that they're going to come out and look solid. But so many times, Rovers just look shell-shocked at half-time, and whatever is said doesn't seem to be registering with the players.
No, I think that sort of first 5 minutes at the start of the second half, it was just like criminal. You know, like I said, we'd gone in, pulled it back to 14-all, you know, sort of broken them down. You know, should have gone in very positive, come out, yeah, we can sort of beat this, and I mean, on the back of the chances we'd created. But to let them score two tries without us even touching the ball, apart from to kick off, you know, I think that just basically obviously bolted them and gave them that incentive and encouragement, and then just sort of put us back to square one, just then forever chasing the game. And that's, yeah, it's like I said, it's a position we've just been in so often this season that you did fear what was going to happen. But again, trying to take some positives out of it, they did actually rally and they did actually pull it back. Yeah, help that Fash was in the sin bin. But I think in the past, probably Rovers team wouldn't have taken advantage of that. You know, how many times have we seen Rovers play against 12 men and they just not scored, but they took full advantage of it, and, you know, fair dues to them. But that first 5 minutes was just shocking. Just couldn't believe it.
Yeah, and I don't know about you, Carl, but what was shocking to me is we kicked to Chris Satai every time, and he seems to be having a field day. He seems to be making... I mean, I'd love to see what his post-contact metres are, but we kept kicking to him, and I think he was making 20, 30 metres with ease. And you sat there looking like, can the players not see this? Why not change it? But obviously then Jimmy Kynos comes up with a try in the 48th minute, and again, Rovers respond, don't they? And you know, 1 minute you're fearing the worst, and then Rovers quickly respond. But like Graham's already said, if you keep conceding points on a regular basis, you make your job so much harder.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, like you say, we never ever question the effort from the Rovers players. You don't need to question it because you know the effort's always going to be there. The only thing that questions, you know, I question sometimes, and like you say, decision making, the smarts of the team. You know, with Chris Satai, he's probably, like you said, he's probably one of the biggest meter makers in Super League, and he's probably been their player of the year for the last three seasons. So you don't have to be a rocket scientist to work out who's their biggest and best forward. And like you say, the only reason I could see that they're kicking the ball to him is to try and gas him out, but he just kept retaining and kept retaining and kept retaining it. And we just didn't seem to, I don't know, it's just not smart, is it? And I think we need to get a bit of that in our game, because otherwise it's, you know, it's going to be an uphill struggle all the time.
I think the irony for me, Carl, was that he was their frontline prop, wasn't he? So it'd almost be, I'd go the other way and starve him of the ball. Don't let him, you know, keep the ball away from him as much as possible. Yet, for whatever reason, we kept going that way. There was something key for me was on the 52nd minute when we was about 10 metres out, Sam Wood knocks on, Mikey Lewis fires a passing swim, and you feel if he goes over there, I mean, he was almost going to glide for it. It was very similar to this try that he scored in the first half. But then we see the Brad Fash crusher tackle. Was it the right decision, James? I think Brad Fash, as much as I don't like him, he won't help by Scotty Taylor coming in and laying on top of him. So as much as Minchella didn't have anywhere to go, I don't think Fash had anywhere to go in the end either.
No, I didn't. So I suppose yeah, it was a bit unfortunate, I think. Yeah, I mean, sort of if you have Taylor landing on you, you're going to go forward quite a long way, aren't you, really? But yeah, I suppose it was a bit unfortunate, and say there's nowhere else it could go. But I suppose because Parcells was having such prolonged treatments, Kendall felt as though he had to do something. And having obviously looked at it again on the video screen, you know, Hicks had probably sort of said, "Yeah, I think you probably need to give him a card for that." Yeah.
What do you think about that, James? If you, I mean, take away the facts, it's Rovers and stuff, but it's evident, isn't it? That if a player feels injured or is injured, you know, I'm not saying anyone's faking anything, but the longer you stay down, the more likely you are to see some kind of action taken.
Yeah, it does. And I think, you know, I think Parcells seems to get, you know, more than his sort of fair share of that sort of incident as well. I think probably it's because of the type of player he is. But, you know, I think there's probably about three or four times already this season where he's had quite a lot of lengthy treatment on the pitch for, you know, for a potential crusher tackle. Yeah, and as I said, it's not the sort of player who's going to fake it either. So,
I was going to say, James, what annoyed me as well is that Brad Fash almost suggested that Minchella was milking it. Where obviously there's a bit of history there from the Good Friday.
Yeah, but the one thing that does confuse me is that, you know, when they do go to the video ref to ask them to sort of look at the incidents and. I've sort of saying, well, sometimes they go for foul play and sometimes they don't go for foul play. They just, again, it's one of the things that seems to be no consistency with how it's done. You know, so you can see somewhere they look at it and say, oh, it's a red or a yellow, and somewhere there's blatantly been a bit of foul play, but they don't even look at it.
James, what
I would say across the board, guys, is, you know, the professional athletes, and there's always one or two rules every season that the players are sat down and briefed regarding. And the last couple of seasons, it's been HIAs, anywhere around the head and neck. It's pretty much, you know, a mandatory 10 minutes on the bin, isn't it? So all the players are aware. I just think when Scott Taylor comes in late, it's the emotion of the derby. Mm. And whether it's a derby or not, it's 10 minutes now standard, whether we like it or not. Them players are aware of that.
Yeah.
And anything to do with around the head, you know, like you say, it's guaranteed for 10 minutes pretty much.
Yeah, because I mean, Fash had put him in that position, even though if Taylor had come in, perhaps Taylor should have gone in the bin as well. That'd have been funny.
Yeah. Send them all on. Yeah. But Graham, Mikey Lewis, he made him pay, didn't he? Because it was a minute later he went in for a try. Some great work from Will Maher and then Elliot Minchella. Minchella did well to throw that pass out to him while he was in tackle. But Mikey Lewis showing everything that he's about, isn't he? You know, quick four, quick piece of skill, just for the try line. And it was a great try from Mikey Lewis.
It was, and I think again, just while we're giving some raps, so I think Will Maher as well. I thought he had a pretty good game going forward as well. I thought he ran the hardest I've seen him run for a while.
He made most tackles of the props. Yeah. 29, and he also made the most meters, 107. So it's probably his best performance of the season.
Yeah, from a numbers perspective, I think it obviously will be, but I think it was evident in actual watching the game as well that he was, you know, fully committed to the drives, and he's obviously put himself about with that number of tackles as well. But yeah, in terms of Mikey Lewis and his impact at that particular point, and obviously getting the hat trick to go with it. He's elusive when he's got ball in hand. He scares people when he runs at them. Is he going to jink left, right? And those big boys in the middle will be absolutely terrified when he's running their way. So I think he's got to be a real jewel for us to look after in the long term and help him along. He sort of reminded me of the old Rob Burrow days of that number seven doing his stuff as a proper elusive number seven. It was fantastic to see because I don't think we've had that for a while. In the squad, we've been quite predictable in the halves, I think, and I think this just gives us that little X factor, for want of a better phrase. And obviously, he's had his injury earlier on in the season, but I think now of having, you know, a few games under his belt consistently, he's showing us now what he can do with ball in hand and how he can cause people problems. My worry is that if we only have Mikey Lewis to rely on going forward and that creativity, that teams will get wise to it and work him out quite quickly and shut him down. I don't think we've got the same offer from the other side of the field with the half as well. And that's where I'd like to see a bit more creativity. And we talked last week about having sort of three bodies for every position on the field. At the minute, I don't think there's enough pressure on all of the halves to for those two places that are out there. And I'd like to see some pressure put on Milnes from a from another player perspective, because I think we could squeeze more out of him from an attacking perspective. I wind my clock back to early part of the season when we were playing well, and there were games where he was contributing heavily with ball in hand and ball off the foot to create scoring opportunities. I remember created a double for Minchella at Craven Park early on in the season, and he's looking at me thinking, go on then, that's pretty good stuff you're doing there, continue to kick on from that. But I think we could do with some more creativity on the other side of the pitch to make sure that we give defences enough to think about that keeps them honest and not just concentrating on Mikey Lewis, because they'll just double up their efforts on him.
Yeah, and Lewis completed his hat-trick on the 62nd minute, but sandwiched in between those two tries, Carl, was Jez Litton coming on. Was you surprised to see him come on what, the 59th minute mark and not see him earlier in the game?
Yes and no. And what I mean by that is Tony Smith has used him a lot earlier in previous games. But then when you look at the size of Hull's pack, I think Mags is sort of thinking, when I see some of their big forwards getting gassed, now's the time. And when you look back at the game, it probably was the right time at the time. Like you say, we were sort of, behind on the scorecard, and we needed him to sort of do something, didn't we? So I think you could say previously he'd been on earlier, but as it stands, their big guys was tiring. So I think it probably was the right time at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And, when we talk about attacking threats, he's definitely one who speeds the ruck up and almost pops up anywhere, doesn't he, Jez Litton? He almost has a free roll. James, Mikey Lewis gets his hat trick. Ben Crooks, he nearly went over just before that. But Lewis, puts us in a fantastic position just before Fash comes back on as well. So we took full advantage of that Simbinin. And again, I think Lewis shows a bit of versatility there, because he's not just a skillful player, but he also showed a bit of power, didn't he? So the way that he sort of steamrolled over the whole players to get his hat-trick try.
Yeah, he did. I think he has shown that in previous games as well. He has got that bit in his armoury. I think, for the size of it, he's a pretty strong strong player. And that last try, his third try, certainly took a lot of scoring. And, he did it. And, sort of didn't want to give up and got the ball over the line and already deserved.
Yeah, definitely. But probably for me, the worst try of the game from a Rovers perspective was scored by Sim, where McIntosh picks up the ball on the right edge. He then dances around some lazy Rovers defence. He does a wraparound with Scott Taylor, I think, and then FC have a huge gap over on the left-hand side. I think if it wants him, it could have been one of the two players or three players who could have scored. McIntosh fires the ball over and Hull FC go in. And all that good work that's been done while Fasher's been in the sin bin, Graham is undone, isn't it, by some lapse of physical defending, which is, again, a feature of Rovers at the moment.
Yeah, I think I've heard a lot of people say defence is about attitude. And you've got to put yourself out there when you're fatigued at that time of the game. A lot of them have been on there for an hour or so or more. It's getting to crunch time in the game. You've got to keep those concentration levels up. You've got to keep that communication up with each other. We looked raggy in defence there. And, I won't say it was a walk-in. It still needed scoring when they managed to. But the way it was scored, I completely understand your point. It was a disappointing try to concede, and especially at that time. And then it gave them the boost on the scoreboard that they needed at that particular time. It just, like you say, released that pressure that we'd been building on the scoreboard and putting them on the back foot. For me, it was just one of those that was one that deflated the tyres a little bit for me.
Yeah, and it's that point though, isn't it? When you're chasing the game, you can't afford any more slip-ups. And obviously, during the game, that's what happened, wasn't it? Rovers got themselves back into it. But when they were chasing, they just left them too much to do. 72nd minute, James, Minchella, no try. obviously, that changes the game massively at that point, doesn't it? The official ruling was that the ball did go forward, but Minchella failed to re-grip it or re-gather it. which means that it is deemed as a knock-on. Whereas if he'd have caught it and then continued to go down, it'd have been a try. Massively frustrating at the time, though, wasn't it? I mean, I know watching back, John Wilkin wasn't very happy about it either.
No, it was just a shocker. You know, I've not watched it back, so I just can't, to be honest. Yeah. Just watching it at the ground, just seeing it, and you know, you get a feeling that it's going to get overturned.
I got that feeling when the longer they looked at
it. Yeah, longer it went on, because Kendall sent it up as a try. It was almost like Hicks was trying to find a reason not to allow it. Now, there's also, there's also the rule that you can actually touch now with your wrist, your forearm. And didn't that come into play at all in the decision? Because he definitely touched it down with his wrist and forearm. So I don't know. I just thought it was a shock, and I thought it was actually quite interesting the number of people who have commented. And if even Brett Hodgson is sort of saying they got lucky, I think there's a feeling that it was a try.
I've had quite a few Hull fans
say to me, it was a try.
Yeah, and what's frustrating as well, Carl, is that Kendall was right on the spot. It was literally a meter away from him grounding the ball. He sends it up as a try. So what is the need to send it up? What is he unsure about? Where he can, and this is why I think it's a mockery. Why referees have to send it up as a try or no try? Because no doubt, if that try scored this Sunday against Wakefield, he's giving that 100% with no doubt in his mind. So why he felt the need to go up to the video referee? Whether Hicks is right with the letter of the law, for me, I'm still 50-50. I understand what the principle of the rule is and what the law is, but I still don't think it was clear cut enough to say it wasn't a try, especially then when the referee Kendall sends it up as a try. I don't think there was enough to overrule him.
No, it's ridiculous, isn't it, really? I mean, I don't normally call referees out, but they've done themselves no favours with that decision, have they? Every time you go on social media, the RFL's getting some stick, or some referee's getting some stick, or, the old Specsavers comes into play and all that type of stuff. And it's just a running joke now, isn't it, every week? I mean, not just from Rovers fans, from fans across Super League. I mean, it's... Like you say, it's got to be 100%, proven to overturn the decision. You may as well not make a decision and just whoever's in the video box let him make that decision for the on-field referee, because, like you say, my boss, he's actually a Wigan supporter, and he actually sent me a screenshot of the try. And Chris Kendall is about a metre away from the ball when it's put down. He sends it up as a try. He's supposed to have 100% proof to overturn it, yet he still get overturned, so... It just absolutely baffles me. And where I was sat in the stadium, Chris, there was a couple of Geordies just above me, and they'd won some tickets via Newcastle United, obviously free tickets to view the rugby. So, and basically they couldn't understand what had gone on. So, it's not just injuring our teams and results and league tables. It's also putting off potential new supporters to the game. And if we can't look at the bigger picture, we may as well give up now. And for me, that's the biggest thing. Which we're always rugby league's the best sport in the world, in my opinion. But we have the so-called official referees who are full-time referees and they know the rules inside out, yet they can't get a basic decision like that. So for me, it's absolutely obscene. I just run out of words what to say, because every other week, whether it's Rovers, Wigan, Wire, Lee, whoever it may be, there's such a basic decision not getting made in the right manner.
Yeah. And
the thing that got me as well was that he didn't send any Hull tries up for the video ref, but every single one of ours more or less went up. And then you had Jack Smith in the Warrington Catalan game, sent everything up. Even when it's blatantly obvious it was a try, he still sent it up. So you still got that inconsistency of how they're deciding what's going to go to the video ref to let them decide on it. So you either do everything or you don't do any of them at all. For me, I'd get rid of the video ref completely.
Well, my take on it now, James, and I don't know what you think, Graham, but my thing now is if you're going to have the video referee at the game, let's video referee every try. Find it.
Do all of them, all games, all tries,
because it's that ambiguity, isn't it? There's that seems a bit indecisive at times. And Graham, what do you think about the slow motion and the freeze frames? Because I think sometimes that tells a story that's not necessarily there to the naked eye.
It isn't, because you know, a slow motion, it's a split, an absolute split second, which the naked eye can't pick up. So I get that, and I understand the points around, you know, the referees are there to make decisions. He's made his decision, sent it up for what, I don't know, because like the others have said, he was right in front of it, couldn't have had a better view. It, you know, at full speed, I do not know how you can determine that he's lost that ball. At full speed. So in terms of the whole debate, it's got a place for me as the video to make the sport fair. But we existed for God knows how long without it, and that was part of the fun of it, was the controversy that it created. And you turn up and it was all, why was that disallowed? But I guess this gives you a bit more clarity of why things are disallowed or allowed, as the case may be. But yeah,
well, let's not forget, Graham, just to interject, let's not forget, we still operate without a video referee. Sunday's game, you know, in under the same level of scrutiny.
Absolutely. For me, it's got to be every game or not, because then it is a fair playing field, because you are literally at the mercy of the person behind the screen watching those slow-mo replays that do tend to enhance whatever it is they're looking at. If it's a tackle in slow motion, it makes it look a lot worse than it might actually be at full speed. And likewise with that particular decision, and again, it was a pivotal point in the game. It wasn't the reason we lost the game, but it was pivotal for those last 7 or 8 minutes. We should have been confident about going on to win the game after that. So I think that's how important it can be within the games. And I think everybody wants a fair playing field, a level playing field, whatever that may be. But you're going to have those inconsistencies this weekend with the live games and ours on Sunday without the video referee. There'll be potentially two exactly the same incidents that could end up with two different decisions based on whether you've got video match officials or not at your game. And that's not, that can't be right.
No. But the good news is Hicks and Kendall will be back on at Craven Park on Sunday as they're the touch judges for our game. So I'm sure the East End will...
Do you think the East End will give Hicks a warm welcome?
Yeah, I'm sure they're looking forward.
I'm sure the Roger Blue will join in as well.
Yeah.
Might even get the well active as well with that one.
Yeah. So I don't know, when you look at the appointment secretaries or whoever makes the appointments, and you just think maybe a bit of common sense could be applied. But obviously this is rugby league where common sense doesn't always come through. Obviously Minchella's try disallowed. Hull go then get another 2 points through Gale after he nails a 45-metre penalty. And that's pretty much the game done and dusted. As much as Rovers huff and puff and try and get another try, Parcell has a break towards the end. But I think that Minchella disallowed try pretty much knocked the stuffing out the Robins. And no doubt it was a spirited performance. Stat-wise, there were 6 players who made over 100 metres. Parcell was our top metre maker. He got 163 metres. Elliot Minchella, probably playing his best game for Hull Kingston Rovers for a number of weeks. He was our top tackler with 42. Will Tate coming into the side on the back of a new 2-year contract, partnering Sean Kennedy on the left. And Lachlan Coote, they made the most carries with 17. Ben Crooks, he made the most tackle busts. He replaced Ethan Ryan in the side, who was reportedly suffering from a foot injury. Like we already mentioned, Wilmar was our leading prop with most tackles and meters. We've already mentioned, James already mentioned Albert Vettey, Corbin Sims, and I tend to agree with him. I think them two really helped us. I think it was their best games for a long, long time, maybe even up there with their best games of the season, in particular Vettey's offload game and the aggression that Corbin Sims brought. Although he is quite borderline sometimes, isn't he? The way he goes running 100 miles an hour, you think he only has to time it a little bit wrong and he's almost seen a yellow or red card. But I think it was a game where aggression was needed, and I don't know, Carl, do you think across our whole forward pack we perform pretty well?
I think there was definitely improvements. I think it was definitely Corbin Simms' best game in a red and white shirt. We know he plays right on the line. We know he basically goes over the line sometimes, but I thought on Sunday, to be fair to him, he controlled that aggression. And like I say, he had the best, probably the best game in a Rovers shirt. As for Vetti, I think he played fairly well as well myself. I did watch a post Wakefield interview with Danny Maguire yesterday on Hull KR TV, and apparently he's injured. He has got a minor groin injury. Yeah. So I think that pretty much sums up Vetti's time at Rovers. As well as he played on Sundays, I think he's had his leg pulled and pulled a groin or something along them lines, quite a deep pull. So I'd be surprised if he played Sunday. But yeah, as a whole, I thought them two was a lot better.
Yeah, and of course, another forward, James, young David Fishwick coming on, steady away. He definitely didn't let anybody down. He came up with some big tackles. I was impressed with the offload, what he came up with as well. And he certainly didn't look out of place on that pitch.
No, he didn't. I thought I was really impressed with him. I think it's probably, I've not seen too much of him, to be honest, but you know, I was really impressed. And I said, as I said earlier, for a 17-year-old to make his debut in that sort of environment, you know, he certainly wasn't overawed. The experience will have done him the world of good. And, you know, it's a really, you know, imagine what it's going to be like when he actually grows up.
Yeah. When he comes of age.
Yeah. I was very impressed, and I hope he gets another go this weekend.
Yeah, we'll come on to that game very shortly, because it is going to be interesting to see how we line up, because there's potentially a number of players coming back. We've made a new signing. Well, we've got a couple of new signings, etc., etc. So, Rovers suffered Derby Day defeat, frustratingly. And we left licking our wounds going into the Wakefield game, which now has a huge importance to the Robins, not just because we're battling potentially for a playoff place, but also there's a little bit of fear now after our Toulouse defeat that we may be facing a relegation battle. So the last thing we need now is a defeat against Wakefield on Sunday. And to help preview that game is Lee from the Wakefield Trinity Heritage podcast. Good evening, Lee. How are you?
Hello, mate. Yeah, thanks for having us. All good. Thank you.
Yeah, sorry for keeping you waiting, but obviously when you were... when it's Derby Day, there's plenty to talk about. So it's, there's plenty to go out on Sunday. But of course, maybe Rovers fans wouldn't be as fearful of Sunday's game if we had got a victory against Hull FC on Sunday. But now we go into this massive game against Wakefield. Obviously, Wakefield on a three-game losing streak, conceded a number of points. What are your thoughts on the game on Sunday, Lee?
Well, it's desperation time for us, really. We don't like... there's 9 games left for us. We're looking down more than up. Although you're just 4 points above us at the moment. I went to the Magic Weekend of the weekend, and I'm a bit of a Rovers fan, but I must admit I was shouting for the black and whites, just simply to keep you in distance of us.
Because yeah, self-preservation.
Exactly. Yeah. So we're only 4 points behind you, and if we can beat you on Sunday, it's 2 points, and it widens the gap with us until Toulouse, so... yeah, it's squeaky bum time for us down at the bottom of the league.
Yeah, how fearful are you? And I suppose, Lee, did you expect to be in this position when you was at the start of the season? Did you expect to be where you are now?
No, not really. We never do. You know, when you look at our squad, we didn't think we'd be in the top 4, but we thought we'd be sort of mid-table with Rovers and Castleford and Hull and those sort of teams, and we thought Salford would be a bit lower. But as it's gone on, we lost our first 4 games, but we didn't play too bad. We battled well against Catalan, we battled well against St Helens, and we were doing okay. Then we won 4, we beat Warrington twice, won in the Cup. And then we've only won 2 out of the last 12. So that's how it's sort of dropped down. You know, we've not really been worried too much. We lost to Toulouse away in May, and then we lost to Leeds, and it was like, oh, crikey, we start looking over our shoulder. Beat Hull, beat Warrington, we relaxed a bit, and then we've lost our last 3, especially the Magic Weekend one. That was horrifying for us. So we're looking over our shoulder again now.
So you just mentioned that game against Toulouse, and at half-time it looked like it was game over. Are you a bit similar to Rose at the moment, that there's a bit of a soft underbelly, that as soon as things maybe start going against them, that it's almost inevitable that a defeat's coming?
It's proved it. I wouldn't have said normally, because I thought our pack, our forwards are going well. We've got some weak outside backs because we've got a few injuries out there, and some of the teams have battered us out wide. We played Salford away a few weeks ago, and we went over there quite confident. We got battered 74-10, and it was like, well, we didn't see that coming at all. But our forwards did well, and you look at our stats, and we looked all right. So our forwards are going all right. And even against Toulouse, you know, we were 20 points to 4 up, we were doing okay. I haven't watched the second half yet from the Magic weekend. But again, we've played with, Fafita got sin binned on 40 minutes, but we've played with 12 men before, and we can do okay with 12 men. But something was amiss, whether it were our outside backs again. But yeah, we just dropped off, and once Toulouse got on a roll, we just couldn't get back.
Yeah, and ahead of the game on Sunday, Lee, there's a bit of movement in the Wakefield squad, isn't there? A couple going out and a couple coming in.
Yeah, it's quite exciting. We've got George Tafua from Manly. He's an exciting character. And we're not sure whether he's going to be centre or wing, but he's played a lot of wing at Manly. So he's a tough character. He'll go well with us.
Is he over here yet? Is he arrived?
Yeah, he's arrived. He's all here. He arrived on Sunday. He's in the squad for Rovers. So that's a good start for us. And we picked up Josh Bowden as well from Hull. So hopefully he'll slot into our pack nicely.
Yeah, and two players going out. I suppose the most surprising one, I mean, Tom Lynham is going to Featherstone. And then is it Yusuf Fidin going to Leeds? It's a bit of a strange one, isn't it? A player going from a team near the bottom to Leeds when you think Leeds would be able to look after themselves in that position.
That's right, yeah. Tom Lynham hasn't done too well for us. He's played 7 games. He's been injured. He did his MCL in his knee early on. But he had a horror at Salford. So he's gone off to Featherstone. You shouldn't really say it, but we might not miss him. We've got a couple of good wingers. Tom Johnson's been out for a while, so he's virtually gone now. He's been our pride and joy for years, but we're not expecting to see him again. And then Yusuf Aden's a strange one because he's only played 7 games this year. To me, he just needs game time for Wakefield. We've got a lot of good forwards. Sometimes they can't get in, but then we brought a lad in called Rob Butler from Warrington who's gone straight in. And it does seem a strange move to Leeds. I know they're short of forwards, maybe suspension, maybe injuries. But he might do us a favour because they're playing Toulouse away at the weekend. So, yeah, I didn't see that one coming. I didn't understand it when I saw it this morning.
Yeah, and it's probably a bit of a difficult question. Well, it might be an easy question, but going into the game on Sunday, obviously we don't know what the squads are yet. They'll be announced at lunchtime tomorrow. But if you get your magic ball out, where do you think your strengths will be on Sunday?
In our forwards again, if our halfbacks can get on the field, we missed Mason Leno at the Magic weekend. He pulled up in training the day before, which was a blow. If we can get back him on the field, then our halfbacks are handy. Jacob Miller's our good captain. Mason Leno's got the kicking game, and then I'm still a fan of our forwards. We've signed Jay Whitbread from Lee, Australian. He's been one of our best forwards all season. He's got good go forwards, got good great work rate. I'm a big Dave Fafita fan. I love the bloke. He's been on our podcast over here, and he's got a great work rate. He's taken a lot of stick over the weekend because of that sin binning, but I don't know. I've just heard you talking about referees at the weekend, and we had Mr. Hicks referee us, and you can't really blame him for the second half, but I don't know. That sin binning, you see it every week. Maybe just a penalty, move on, but he got sin binned. Having said that, Fafita to me is our best forward. So that's where it lies for us. Matty Ashurst, Jay Pitts, a couple of wide runners, and they're good workhorses. James Batchelor at loose forward. So our forwards are good. They'll take you on up the middle.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how Batchelor goes, because by all accounts, he's supposed to be signing for the Robins next season, although that seems to have gone a little bit quiet at the moment. I don't know. Have you got any inside knowledge there, Lee?
I can't tell you, mate. I can. If I tell you, I'd have to kill you. Yeah. But it would be a shame if he went, because he's one of our young guns. You know, there's no point us selling our young guns to you when we've developed them. And if he goes, that would be another strange move, really.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, Graham, I'll just bring you in. I suppose it's a case of Tech Wakefield likely at our peril.
Yeah, absolutely. They're going to be smarting after the result at the weekend. I think we saw what we can do against them early on in the season. We sort of blew them away at Craven Park earlier on, but that was a different Rovers mentality then. We were in a different vein of form. I think anybody turning up on Sunday thinking it's going to be a walkover because of Wakefield's position in the league. Well, no, I don't think that's correct. I think we've got to work hard. I think we've got to start fast again. I think we've got to try and dominate as much as we can, get points on the board, make them chase the scoreboard rather than give them any encouragement whatsoever by letting them get ahead early doors and get points on the board against us so that we're not in a similar chasing situation like we seem to have been in the last few weeks. So I think we need a fast start. We need a noisy crowd there on Sunday to get really behind them, rev them up, and hopefully, you know, attacking wise, put as many points on the board, but shoring up our defence to not concede as many. And I'm confident we can do the business and come away with the 2 points on Sunday.
Yeah, James, I'll bring you in. Are you expecting a low-scoring affair?
I'm expecting a squeaky bum type of affair. It just Wakefield is one of those games, whether it's home or away, that we just never seem to do well in. Yeah. You know, I think I go back to 2019 when we had, back in the season, we had a must-win game then against them and we just bombed it. And, yeah, I'm not looking forward to Sunday. I think it's going to be quite a tense affair. I think, say, Wakey can, they'll obviously fancy the chances against us, given the run of form we're on. You know, they can't possibly, you know, I can't see Wakefield possibly playing as badly as they have against Salford and again in that second half against Toulouse. So, yeah, it's going to be quite a tight team. And I think, you know, just hopefully that some of the players we're hoping to have back in the forwards and in the backs will hopefully just tip it in our favour. But I think it's going to be such a tight game. There's probably about 4 points in it, that's all, I think.
Yeah, well, Wakefield's last three games conceded 38, 46, 74. Rovers' last three games conceded 34, 28 and 38. So
nil-nil draw.
It suggests we're not going to, it's not going to be yet nil-nil at half-time, is it, at that rate? And I suppose, Lee, the challenge for Wakefield, very much like it is for Rovers, is just to stay in the game, isn't it? Don't let it drift away, because if the closer you can stay together, the definitely the way Rovers are and probably the way Wakefield are at the moment, you've got a chance right to the final whistle.
That's right. Just what Graham was saying. We don't want to let Rovers run away with it too early. We've had a bad habit of that. Letting Wigan's done it, Salford's done it, a few others have done it. Before we know it and we've got off the bus, we're 12 and 16 nil down. We don't want that to happen. The only good thing that I think, we haven't had a bad run at Craven Park over the last few years. I think we've won 4 out of the last 6 and we've come over there and played well. The last time we got battered, but yeah, you were on a roll then, and we just come out after a tough Easter. But we have had some good results over there, and I often quite like coming over because you can sit in that nice stand, and it's going to be a hot day as well. It depends which team fits into the weather.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I think temperatures are expected to top at, 25, 26 degrees. The Rovers pitch is in very good nick at the moment. So there's going to be opportunity for the backs, really, to get on the ball and show show what they can do. Because if you're reliant on the forwards, there's no doubt that they're going to tire you in the heat, especially if they're expected to do a lot of work. Lee, it's been really interesting hearing from your point of view. If you hand on heart, where do you see the game going on Sunday?
We've got to win. If we lose, then, because Toulouse have got 3 home games, Leeds, yeah, Salford, Hull, and we don't need that. It's literally like every match for us is a cup final. So we've got to come over there looking for a cup final win. So hand on heart, we've got to win.
Yeah, do you reckon because of the gravitas of the game, could we expect a good following from Wakefield on Sunday?
Yeah, when you look on Facebook, there's a lot of people sort of knocking us after the performance we've had. But we've got a good loyal crowd. We've got a couple of good thousand who'll come up wherever we go. Me and my family will be there. So no matter where we go, we'll be there.
Yeah, Lee, and I definitely recommend, if you get a chance, experience Craven Street. Get yourself in there if you can pre-game. It's fantastic in the sunshine. Brilliant before the game. Even better after the game if we've got a win. Not so good if we've defeated. It's a bit of a ghost town after that. But fingers crossed on Sunday, it's a Rovers victory, not a Wakefield. But obviously, we wish you all the best, Lee, especially just not on Sunday.
Good man. Thanks for having us.
Cheers, Chris. Cheers, Lee.
Maybe not.
Lee. Oh, no, I can bring you back in. Go on, Lee. I'll add a question for you.
Go on.
Like, just before you go, mate, I'm a bit of an old sucker for
for players who have been at a club for a long period of time and they give a loyal commitment to that particular team. Just a quick word off yourself about Bill Tupou. Can you sort of give us a, you know, what a sort of thing he's done for your club? I know Wakefield have been down in the dumps over the years and he seems to always stick by him. So can you give us a bit of an insight and give him some raps about him now he's retired?
Oh, he was a tremendous signing. He was a very quiet character. He doesn't say a lot, but we picked him up in 2015. I think it was Brian Smith that brought him over. And he just added that size to the centre. And over that, our greatest period over the last few years, when we finished fifth and sixth, our three-quarter line were Rhys Lynn, Bill Tupou in the centre, Tom Johnston one wing, Ben Jones Bishop on the other. And Bill Tupou was the main man in that three-quarter line. And he ripped some teams to shreds. We once went to Wigan and we were 20-0 down after 20 minutes. Fafita came on and that right edge, suddenly Bill Tupou scored a hat-trick and we won. He did the same to Callum Watkins against Leeds and we went to Headingley a few years ago and demolished them by 30. So yes, he's been a tremendous player. He got in the Dream Team a few years ago as well. So it's such a shame. He snapped his patella last year. He got back on the field this year in the A-team. And he did it again. So he actually did it, ripped it again. And a ruptured patella is a devil of a thing to come back from. So it's a shame. But yeah, he's been a wonderful buy and a wonderful signing and a great ambassador for our club.
Yeah, and, I'm glad he's not.
We'll have it out. We'll
have it out. Excellent. Thanks, that Lee. Take care.
Cheers, fellas.
Cheers, Lee.
Thanks, Lee. Bye.
Right, injury update. Ahead of Sunday's game, we might have a couple of players returning, Ryan Hall and George King. Although it's not set in stone that they'll be named in Sunday's team, it's expected that they'll be named in the squad tomorrow. Danny Maguire said that, I'm confident George and Ryan will put their hand up this weekend. As a coach, you never put pressure on players to come back early, so that's not the case. And they have to tick their boxes from the physio team. But if things keep going to plan, I'm sure we will see them at the weekend. Danny Maguire also said that Frankie Holton, Albert Vette and Matty Staughton and Kane Lynette will obviously be missing this Sunday. Albert Vette, like Cal already said, suffered a groin injury. Frankie Holton, I mean, we didn't even talk about him in the derby, did we? Coming off so early, you know. How crazy was that to lose another player, to lose so early in a game and who knows what would have happened if Frankie Holton had been on the pitch, let alone the fact that we'd have had another interchange, which could have had a huge impact. So, yeah, but thankfully he's not broke his collarbone, I think, as fair suspected. I think it's a ligament injury. So they're hoping that he may be back sooner than later, but he's definitely out of Sunday's game. Matty Staughton, he's still not recovered from a toe injury that he suffered against Toulouse. He's still in some pain, so he won't be playing on Sunday. But it's massive, isn't it, James, to have hopefully George King and Ryan all back in the lineup this weekend?
Oh, definitely. Just going to give us so much more power and solidity. And you know the yardage that Hall makes from coming out the back, and just the way King goes about himself. I think if we can get those two back, I feel a lot more confident about Sunday. Whereas I think if King particularly wasn't going to be playing, I think then you're potentially looking at, you know, who you're going to play. You're probably going to have to play and bring young Connor in to make a debut, and then you're going to have two really raw kids up against, as Lee said, quite a big Wakefield pack. You know, so hopefully King's going to be able to make it.
Yeah. And you know, like we said, hopefully gone are the days where we're forcing players to play with injuries and painkillers and etc. Because Rovers have shown it doesn't really stand us in good stead in the long term, is it? So hopefully, if they are available and fit and ready, they'll be playing on Sunday because they'll have a huge impact if they do play. Two players who might also feature on Sunday against Wakefield. First one is Lewis Senior. Many people expected him to feature in the derby. Danny Maguire chose not to play him. You'd expect Graham, if you're bringing a player in on loan, he's going to feature at some point. And you'd probably guess that he'll play on Sunday. I suppose the question I'm posing to you is, if Senior does play, who's the one who drops out and misses out?
Well, if they're going to play him on the wing as well, then if you bring in Hall and Senior in, that's both your wingers replaced. Is that the plan? I
does Will Tate deserve that?
I don't think he does after Sunday's performance. I think he was pretty good out there. I thought he showed up well. Can you see us? Can you afford not to put Ryan Hall back in there if he's fit and available? Question mark. And I think the just jumping back to the previous point around King and Ryan Hall is we got bit on the bum with Kane Lynette in that semi final when he came back too soon from that serious injury to his bicep, I think it was, and we've lost him for a longer period of time. So I just hope, and knowing how rugby players will stick their hands up to play, I hope we don't fall into that trap of playing them when they're not ready to, or maybe it's just a week too early and we take that gamble. I don't think we need to gamble just yet on that side of things. So I think if Hall's fit, he comes straight back in as one of the wingers. And I think it would be harsh to replace Tate at this occasion, because we don't know what we're going to get from senior at the minute. However, again, we're not stood on the touchline all week working with them Monday to Friday. Maguire and the coaching team will be looking at them, and I'm sure they'll come up with the right decision of who best fits their game plan for Sunday's game.
Yeah, and now I've had the chance to watch that Derby game back, and the fact we've got senior on the books, it was almost like that game was crying out for someone in the Rovers squad to our team to have some raw pace. It was almost like you could see how the game could open up if you had someone out there who could really take on the line. Of course, Ethan Ryan didn't feature. And then after him, we're not really blessed with pace in the team, are we? So whether senior plays, I don't know if anyone listens to the Craig Harrison podcast, what he does, Show Me the Money. He spoke a little bit about senior. He's actually the agents for senior, George King, Dean Hadley, Matty Staughton, Louis Johnson, Will Dagger, Mikey Lewis, Rowan Milnes, Will Maher and Jez Litton. He's all got him tied down on their books. And he said that Willie Peters had earmarked leg speed and athleticism with senior fitting that bill. Hence why, you know, we're signing for next season. So it was interesting to hear what he said, because it looks like that that's the type of player that we're looking for. And it'd be great if we can see him on Sunday. But like Graham said, it's difficult to see where he fits in. And I suppose, Carl, we're in a bit of a funny position, aren't we? Because another player who's come in is Sam Royal from St Helens, a player who's captained every side at St Helens, including the first team. He's going to come in likely in the second row. He's only on a two-week or a two-game loan, although Danny Maguire did say in that press conference that you mentioned that he's not nailed on to start, although you would expect, wouldn't you, if you're bringing a player like that in, there's no point in being on the bench, not featuring the squad whatsoever. But we're in a strange position, aren't we? Because although we have got injuries across the board, if you look at our squad against Newcastle and then you look at our options for Sunday, we're not totally out of players, are we?
No, we've got numbers, haven't we? I think it's putting in who fits them positions better in terms of, you know, previous experiences, or, you know, how much game time they've had in the past. I don't know a great deal about is it Joe Royal? So I know he's played a handful of Super League games.
Oh, Jim Royal.
That shows you. Hey, you might imagine, eh? But no, going back to your point, it's circumstances, isn't it? And like Graham was saying earlier, we give our opinions, but based on what we don't see. So, like with Louis Senior, I mean, they probably didn't play him last week because he wasn't up to speed with set plays and, you know, the structures that they're playing to and things like that. And it could be the same again, you know, for Royal this week. So it's difficult. There's probably arguments for both. You know, playing players that are coming on loan straight away, or give them a week or so to sort of integrate into the club and the squad. One good thing is, and what Maggie did speak about, was competition for places. So the numbers are good, aren't they? So he's got them options, hasn't he? And with Graham, you know, saying about Will Tate earlier on, and I think he will bring senior in, and I think he'll. I don't want him to drop Will Tate, but I think he will. I think he'll dip him in and out for the remainder of the season and get that bit of experience bit by bit. So it's, you know, and that's been proven in the past with young players with Rovers, and never sort of thrown them in and kept them in. They've just been dipping their toes in and giving bits of experience at a time. And I think that will be the case with some of these loan players as well.
Do you think you might put Tate in the centre? Because obviously we've highlighted that the right edge was a bit shocking on Sunday. So potentially bringing in senior in on the right and Tate on the right centre, and isn't Tate sort of, you know, naturally a centre anyway? And he, you know, like I say, he didn't look out of place at all on Sunday, did he? So.
No, well, that's the good thing. And like Chris was saying, we're down on chokes, so we're not down on numbers, are we? There's options options on both flanks. So, I mean, you know, we've seen a lot of stranger things at Old Kingston Rovers, haven't we? So, well, like you say, it's all up for debate.
You know, if by all accounts, Ethan Ryan's back fit, Ben Crooks, Sam Wood, Sean Kenny-Dowell, Will Tate, Lewis Senior, there's a few numbers there, isn't there, to fit into into them positions.
Yeah, without a doubt. And what I would say is, you know, there's a lot of players, you know, like your Kynos and your Cruxes, etc., that are sort of 30 plus now. And I think the next season or so, it's going to be, you know, keep speaking about the youth and giving the young guys a chance. And I think, like I said earlier, I think that's what will happen. I think a few of these players like your Cruxes, I think they'll eventually get phased out, because we're adamant that we're going with the youth, and that's sort of our policy. So hopefully we'll see that come to fruition in the next season or so.
Yeah.
Just picking up on your point, Carl, around the loan signings and needing a bit of time to bed in. If you cast your mind back to Sunday's game, Hull FC didn't do too bad with three loan signings coming in, fitting straight into the system, getting themselves on, you know, on the scoreboard. Walker at the back was rock solid. So again, they'll have only had a matter of a couple of 3 days to get to know teammates, systems, players, etc. It can be done. So, you know, why can't the players that we're bringing in as well, you know, do that? Why do we need to leave them 2 or 3 weeks to do that? If they're not fit, then they're not fit. Fair enough, I get that. You know, from a match player perspective, but if they're fit and raring to go, and they're, you know, again, we don't see the Monday to Friday stuff. If they feel they're ready, let's get them in there. Let's get them playing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I was just going to say, it's interesting that Sam Royal's signing was made on the back of Frankie Ollerton and Albert Vette obviously being injured. At the time as well, Dean Adley had been served a one-game suspension. That's been now overturned, so he's free to play against Wakefield. It'd be interesting to see if Hadley hadn't had that suspension, whether we would have dipped into the transfer market and whether we'd have gone with what we had. Because like you said, I thought Jimmy Kynos, I thought he did all right. He came in and fitted in against West. I thought he did a decent job. I think he's always a 7 out of 10. I don't think he very rarely lets us down. I suppose, James, for you, one question. Are you disappointed that we've signed another club's youngster and we've given an opportunity to somebody else to get some game time when we could have maybe put faith in one of our own youngsters?
Potentially, I think there is that argument. But then, as I say now, I think if you've got potentially a number of players already who are going to be out, then you have to balance that against the risk of bringing in somebody who's on debut, or at least with somebody like, you know, I think someone like some Royal, you know, he's come through the academy, he's actually played first grade for Saints. So he's got a bit more experience than probably about some of our youngsters have. And I think given the magnitude of the game that we've got on Sunday, I think I'd rather go do that than sort of blood a couple more youngsters. I think the time if we're going to blood youngsters is probably in the back end of the season when we're actually, you know, we know where we're going to be in the season. If we're out of the playoffs, we're not going to go down. Then that's probably the chance to play people like Connor and Wilkinson and those sort of kids.
Yeah. And I feel like Carl said, it just provides more competition for places, doesn't it? No one's a shoo-in. Other than probably Mikey Lewis, Ray Milnes, Sean Kenny-Dowell, Lachlan Coote, you know, there's probably about 5 or 6 players who were guaranteed, but there's a lot of competition for places there. And what's done Rovers in the past, in for the last few seasons, is that because of injuries, because of a lack of squad, players have been playing because there's been nobody else to take their place. So, you know, if all Sam Royal does is add competition, it may spare on players to get, you know, that extra 10%, 20% effort, etc. Although, like we said, you know, he's no muggles coming in. He's played at every level for St. Helens. He's captained them at every level. He's played, what, five, I think, games this season in Super League. He's got a new contract at St. Helens. So he's going to be there until at least the end of next season. So he's probably more match ready, more match fit than anybody in the Rovers junior ranks at the moment.
Chris, and what was also alluding to earlier on is circumstances. These short-term loans are to deal with the immediate circumstances and not the long-term circumstances. So going back to what Graham's question he asked me earlier on, yes, I'm not saying the can't work instantly, and I'm also not defending that black and white lot one iota, but they was absolutely down to the bare bones. So their hand was forced in terms of them loan signings. Whereas if they had a few more numbers like we had, you know, they can observe them, can't they, and sort of blend them into the system. So that's, you know, it's all circumstances at that time in that week for the next couple of weeks ahead of the sale. So it's circumstances, you know, that determines a lot of the decisions, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, I think it's a fair point, Carl. I think there was an interesting point made by Maguire when he sort of announced the Sam Royal capture there for the couple of games, was that there were a lot of other clubs that were unwilling to loan players across to Rovers, and whether that's just symptomatic of each club of where they're at in terms of their own injuries and protecting their own interests, that may be the case, or whether they're looking over the shoulder and thinking, well, you're rivaling us for a top six spot potentially. We don't want to send any of our players over there. But I think the purpose of this one is as you say quite rightly, just to fill a short term gap until we can get a couple more bodies back. Hopefully, as you've alluded to, Chris has got that experience of being in and around the Saints Academy system and the first team for 2 or 3 years. Got experience of Super League football. So I think for that, I don't think we've got any worries. And like you say, why would you bring him over if you're not going to fit him into the squad? Why would you just have him sat in the stand? That seems pointless. He could stay at Saints and work with their first team for 2 weeks rather than come. So that just seems to me like an almost a shoo-in that he's going to be part of the squad.
Yeah, it's going to be, as ever, it's going to be interesting, isn't it, to see how it line up again. Obviously, squad's announced tomorrow, lunchtime, and even then, I'm guessing we probably won't have that clear a picture on how we might line up, although it'd be interesting to see whether Royal and Senior do come into the squad and then who drops out as a consequence of that. But yeah, there's no doubt that Sunday's game is going to be very interesting, and like we've already talked about, it's going to be very nervy. Some club news, the game against Wigan, which was originally scheduled for the 31st of July, then got brought forward to the Friday, is now being moved to the Thursday, 28th of July, 8 p.m. kickoff at the DW Stadium. So not long before we play them. And don't forget, as well as the Red Robin Podcast Weekly, we also have the Red Robin Heritage Cast, which we are now up to 20 episodes. Gary Clark, the latest one. These are honestly a really fantastic listen, and they do provide a great insight into what it means to pull on the famous red and white of all Kingston Rovers. Past Heritage Cast guests have included Clint Newton, John Dorahay, Wayne Parker, as well as people like David Hall, Paul Fletcher, Justin Morgan, and that's just to name a few. So go check them out. I guarantee you, whether you're a new fan, an old fan, there's something out there for everyone, which also brings me on to Craig Hall, who's had his testimonial granted by the RFL. I think he's on 300 career appearances now. Definitely a fond favourite of Rovers fans. Two spells at the club, he made 118 appearances for the Robins, scoring 68 tries in the process. Many supporters probably still wish he was around, and he definitely created some highlights for Rovers fans. Probably none more so when he signed for the Robins from Lee in his second spell. Went straight into the Derby lineup and probably scored one of the best Derby tries ever seen. Good to see him getting some recognition in it, James. And he's a He's definitely a fan's favourite, Craig Orland, and it's announced that events will start in November, and I'm sure if he hosts things over in the east side of the city or whether Featherston can get a game against Rovers, it'll be well supported by Robin supporters.
No, it's really well deserved. I think, you know, it just seems to have been around forever. And like I say, two stints with Rovers, he gave his all every single time. And I think if you talk to probably fans of all the clubs he's been at, you know, whether it's Leeds, Featherston, Toronto, yeah, you know, even Hull, you know, they'll say the same. You know, so I think, you know, he's very, very well respected across the whole game, and just always gave his all. And as you said, he's always had that ability to pop up with that try, an important try just when you needed it, and some, you know, yeah, something spectacular.
And the drop goal as well.
Absolutely, a drop goal, yeah.
Yeah. Any favourite Craig Orland moments, Graham?
Yeah, I think the drop goal one for me, definitely.
Yeah. So, like I say, hopefully he will have some stuff posted over here. I know he's already been in touch with Adj from the RSG, so looks like some things are in the outing. But it's going to be a nervous time, isn't it, gentlemen? I won't put you on the spot, but in short, Graham, if we're going to get a victory on Sunday, what do we need to do?
Fast start, shore up the defence.
Yeah, what about you, Cal?
Yeah, get them on the back foot. They're a lot less confident in us. A couple of early tries. Hopefully their confidence will totally go and we'll get the 2 points.
Yeah. What about you, James?
Just score more points than them.
Yeah. For me, you know, seems, you know, daft, doesn't it? We just can't let, if they are going to take the lead, we just can't let them run 2-3 tries in front of us, because, you know, as much as Rovers have the ability to score points, I don't think we're very good at stopping them. So once they get a few scores in front, it leaves us with a massive task to do. Of course, that brings us to the end of another fantastic Red Robin Podcast Weekly. As ever, a huge thank you to Kyle, James and Graham for giving me their views and opinions on all things Hull, Kingston Rovers. And a reminder that the Robins do take on Willie Poaching's Wakefield Trinity side this Sunday at Craven Park, on what is set to be another afternoon of scorching rugby league. If you're going to the game, remember to be loud and proud, and don't forget, live, love, laugh and be happy.